you, everyone, for joining us today for our World Peace Diet Circle call, third Thursday of every month, and this is July 2019. So I hope you're all doing well. Thank you for taking time out of your busy lives. I know we're all busy in many ways, or we have many interests and things, demands on our time. So the fact that you're here is very meaningful, and I greatly appreciate it. And I know the animals also appreciate it as well. So hopefully you can hear me okay. This is a little bit of a, what would you say, technically challenging situation. I'm in the Sierra Mountains, pretty high up in the mountains at about maybe 5,700 feet, just north of Yosemite. It's near a place called Pinecrest Lake, and we're near the North Fork of the Tuolumne River. And yeah, so it's actually a macrobiotic, organic, vegan, although I have to say, I wish it was more vegan. I mean, the food is vegan, but not all of the people are on board with that whole idea, although they're open to it, I guess you'd say. That's why I'm here. They wanted me to come here and speak. So I'm at this summer conference that's been going on. This is the 50th anniversary. It was started by Herman Ihara and his wife Cornelia Ihara. They're disciples of Osawa, if you know the macrobiotic movement at all. Michio Kushi was the other main disciple in the West. Michio Kushi in Massachusetts and Herman and Cornelia Ihara in California. So they have their own take on it, basically. And so there's some, dyed-in-the-wool macrobiotic people here who are sort of debating among themselves if it's more important to be vegan or more important to be whole, eat whole foods, which maybe means you don't eat any vitamin B12, which means you have to eat a little fish. So those kinds of questions get raised here. But anyway, I'm up in the mountains here. I don't really have a very good, I don't feel anyway, internet connection or phone connection. So I guess press *6 on your phone. Anyway, in any event, if you'd like to leave a message of some kind, or not really a message, but I mean raise your hand, I guess is a better word, way to say it. If you want to raise your hand, press *6. And maybe just let me know if I'm not easily legible or hearable, because it would be good to know. Maybe I can do something. Since it was hard to hear, maybe I'll just, in two sentences, I'll do a very mini version and just say that we give thanks for this precious opportunity to raise awareness and know that we are planting seeds of awakening and of compassion and kindness, not only in this call, but when we leave this call and go forth into our lives, working together and cooperating with every other force in the universe that's also working to raise awareness and learning to discriminate, to be wise and compassionate together in our advocacy. And so it is. Okay, thank you. So that was the abbreviated form of the meditation. And so I was talking about clarity. I thought it was important to talk a little bit about that. And I made a video that some of you may have seen recently, just about a week, maybe 2 weeks ago, a week ago, something like that, of some thoughts that I wanted to share. It's called Alcohol and Vegan Living. And the basic idea in the video is really about the importance of clarity in our lives, and that our society in many ways conspires to reduce clarity. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that here, because I think it's really hugely important for us to be effective advocates to understand the way our society in many ways operates to reduce our clarity. And it happens on a lot of different levels. So it's important, I think, to understand first and foremost that ultimately, I think, in many ways, each one of us as an individual is responsible to do the best we can ourselves to be as clear in our consciousness as we can be, as much of the time as we can be. And not to say also that we can do our best to help create conditions in society that support people who are clear, people who have clarity, that everyone has more clarity about what's happening. But I think that this is such an important point. To me, it's becoming like almost overwhelmingly important that animal agriculture, the fundamental quality of animal agriculture in many ways is that it reduces the clarity of those who participate in it. And animal agriculture at its core is about disconnecting from our inherent wisdom, compassion, sensitivity, and clarity, seeing clearly what we're doing and the consequences of what we're doing. And that being born and raised in a society that's organized at its core around herding animals, the whole thrust of the society is essentially to try to reduce the awareness and the capacities, the capabilities, and the clarity of the people in the society to this, just the same way we do to the animals. The basic idea is that we want cows, pigs, chickens, turkeys, ducks, geese, fish is factory farm, who are as docile, who are as numb, who are, there's people working in laboratories trying to genetically engineer animals that are used for food and other products to just try to lobotomize them, in a sense, try to just reduce their capacity to feel it'll be more profitable. I mean, you could say they don't want them to suffer so much, so maybe if they can just create sheep and goats and cows and pigs and chickens that are completely numb, they wouldn't be frustrated. They wouldn't bang their heads against the bars. They wouldn't peck each other and bite each other's tails. And, they would just kind of sit there and eat and get fat and could be killed. But the same thing is happening to us. We ourselves are born into a society that does violence to our clarity, to our awareness, that's really designed to do that. It's designed to reduce the clarity of our children and of us as adults through our entire life. Everything about it, I would say virtually everything in many ways that's supported by the government and corporations and financial institutions and many science in general is one of the strongest contributors to this. A lot of the mainstream religions also are strong contributors to this dumbing down and disconnecting of us from our essential sanity, clarity, bright-eyed awareness. So alcohol, toxic drugs in general, alcohol being the number one most toxic drug that there is in our society today, and also one of the most heavily promoted and most culturally approved, really, drug in the most devastating, socially, it's by far the most socially devastating drug. Nothing comes close to alcohol. Not crack cocaine, not heroin, nothing. I mean, certainly not marijuana, but nothing comes close to alcohol in terms of social destruction of families, destruction of society. But also alcohol is very damaging to us as individuals, to our individual physical health and mental health as well. And we could probably talk a whole hour just about that, so I won't do that. But in the video, I just go over a few of those points. And I think that it's very interesting because it's understandable that as vegans, we want to make veganism as accessible to the mainstream as we possibly can. And since most people are drinking alcohol, at least beer and wine, but maybe not hard liquor, but a lot of people drink that also, that we're quick to say that, sure, you can You don't have to give that up, you know. You can drink and be a vegan. And there's lots of people who promote alcohol consumption, a lot of vegans who promote it, and create cookbooks that pair wines and cheeses that are all vegan. And in restaurants, of course, many of the vegan restaurants serve wine and beer at least as a way to get more people to come in and make everything more socially available. So you know, I don't want to say that, I mean, personally, you know, I don't want to say that we shouldn't make veganism as welcoming as we possibly can to people who are not yet vegans. So I don't get up when I'm giving a talk promoting veganism. I don't get off on a thing about alcohol. But I think for people who are vegan, those of us who are in the movement, and we're working to try to raise awareness about the benefits of vegan living, that it's important to understand how there are just countless intoxicants in our society that are designed to dumb us down and disempower us as human beings so that we won't be effective in questioning the established order. And alcohol is certainly a huge one. You know, if I'm, you know, when Madeline and I go to potluck gatherings, very often there's alcohol being served, and very often, or at restaurants, we go with other people. And I always have this feeling, you know, like, gosh, if someone's drinking alcohol and I'm talking to them, am I really talking to them, or am I talking to somebody else, you know, who's different, who's not really them, because alcohol does affect our consciousness. And it's unfortunate, but there's people, you know, we are all wounded in our society. We're all in a lot of pain, you know, to one degree or another, so psychological pain, I think, some more than others. And, of course, alcohol and other substances that are abused, it's because of the pain. We want to escape the pain. So someone drinks because they want to escape the pain. And alcoholism is rampant among, you know, slaughterhouse workers, for example, drug addiction in general, or people who are traumatized. You know, trauma is painful, and to escape trauma, people use substances. If people are abused as children, if they're raised in alcoholic families where the parent comes home, you know, who's drunk and starts abusing the children and abusing the spouse, and kids are raised in that environment, that trauma, it breeds more trauma, and they're more likely to do the same thing to their children. So it's all an escape. And animal agriculture is based essentially at its core on this escaping. You know, we don't want to look at the violence that we're causing other animals. We don't want to look at the environmental devastation. We don't want to look at what it does to us to imprison animals against their will and stab and kill them as a society. So there's an enormous amount of pain, psychological pain, invested in animal agriculture, and a massive amount of incentive to numb that pain somehow. So we numb the pain with alcohol. We numb the pain with lots of other pharmaceutical, non-pharmaceutical, probably both pharmaceutical and non-pharmaceutical. I mean, prescription opiates, various kinds, avoiding to help with depression and anxiety and insomnia and many other problems, as well as illicit drugs of various kinds. And then on top of that, I don't have to go into it, but you all know what I'm talking about. We have toxic television that is going on all the time, or media in general that is extremely toxic, spewing forth one lie after another, as well as, unfortunately, you know, a lot of violence. And music. I mean, I can't believe we were sitting around the campfire a couple of days ago here at this camp, singing some of the old songs we all remember from the Beatles and Simon and Garfunkel and Harry Chapin and, you know, various Bob Dylan. And I was just sort of in my mind comparing some of the lyrics to those songs to the lyrics of many of the songs coming out today, which I don't follow that closely, but when I do hear it from time to time, I mean, all these X-rated lyrics, you know, and a lot of lyrics that are violent and abusive, and the movies, the films, how violent and abusive they are. I mean, all of this is essentially an attack on the underlying sense of connectedness that we have, and the essential clarity and intelligence that we have. Really, in the 1960s, I mean, music, art, and even the media was used in many ways as an awakening, you know, to wake us up. It was really quite remarkable. I mean, they really showed the destruction of what was of lives in Vietnam. It was one of the main reasons we were able to really have a strong protest movement against war, was because the media was not just reducing our clarity, it was actually bringing some clarity that's completely gone now. I would say virtually it's the level of censorship just in the last 6 months on the internet has skyrocketed. People, our voices are just being systematically deleted from YouTube, from Google search engines. Google search engines now will not bring up anything about natural, organic, non-pharmaceutical modalities of healing. Anyone who questions vaccinations is deplatformed, and not just deplatformed, they're attacked. Their websites are brought down, destroyed very often. They lose you know, any access to Facebook or to Vimeo or to YouTube or to Google search engines. So we, you know, become invisible. And the same thing is also happening to vegan voices as well. You know, there's Michael Greger's been attacked, Kip Anderson with Cowspiracy. I'm sure it's happening a lot more. I mean, I saw it myself. I was on Wikipedia for years, and I wrote one article quite a few years ago, probably 5 years ago maybe, questioning, where I had one sentence talking about the fact that vaccines are toxic and also cause enormous suffering to animals. They're tested on animals and they use animal products. So I was sort of saying it's better to build your natural immunity than to subject yourself or your children to vaccines. And that was it. I was disappeared. I don't no longer exist on Wikipedia. So I know anyone who's on Wikipedia is going along with a cultural program. You know, they're not questioning it. Which, you know, has its benefits. I try not to talk about things that really, I know if I talk about, I'm going to just become invisible. But that's the situation. You know, there's a situation where we have a society that's organized around animal agriculture, and the whole idea is to disempower any effort that's made to awaken or to have clarity. So alcohol is promoted like wild. I mean, promoted. It's advertised. Drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, are promoted enormously. And by the way, it's important to know that these huge expenditures by the pharmaceutical industry and by the other industries, like the literally big advertisers, like the food industry, the fast food industry, the chemical industry, the banking industry, the petroleum industry, it's not so much. I mean, part of it is, of course, to get their message in front of people. You know, so when you pay millions of dollars for radio ads or television ads or print ads, you get your message in front of people, and that's part of the reason they do it, because they want to manipulate people. It's all about that. It's about trying to get people's mind to lose clarity. Essentially, that's what advertising is all about. It's for the most part, I mean, it doesn't have to be, but if the kind of advertising that's done today, for the most part, is very aggressive with large budgets, at least the corporate advertising, and it's to push people in a certain direction. But more than just getting the message in front of people is the fat basic fact, which I understand very clearly since my father owned a chain of newspapers. When you're getting money from advertisers, the news, you know, you're not going to run news articles that question the advertisers. That's the real reason they give them. That's the real reason the pharmaceutical industry gives billions of dollars to the media. So they know that the media is never going to run anything except positive, glowing reports about their products. And the same thing with everything else, all the other large advertisers. So the media, the alternative media is the only hope, and the alternative media is now being invisibilized. So that's the situation that we face. And the vegan movement, I think it's important for us as vegans to understand the mechanics. That's what I mean by wisdom and compassion. You know, not to be gullible, not to be so gullible. We tend to be really, I think, very gullible and just think that the when we see something on television or read it in the New York Times, that it must be journalism, you know, and it's not true. I mean, it's all part of a larger agenda that goes back thousands of years, really, of controlling and reducing people's capacity to effectively question the enslavement of animals and of us, ourselves, actually, to keep us continuing on buying products that are going to land us in the hospital or in, unfortunately, in mental and health institutions and doing jobs that keep us pretty much too busy to do anything, to organize and to mobilize. And to and I was just watching today, there was a fellow here doing some a presentation on natural agriculture, and he showed a short video of a scientist, a researcher in Canada, who was just saying that there's been an absolute spike over the last 10 to 20 years in the number of young people who have chronic mental and physical disease. You know, chronic mental and physical disease was never seen until people get pretty old, you know, typically, you know, the chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease and breast, prostate, and colon cancer and autoimmune diseases and various other forms of chronic disease. Well, you didn't see that in younger people and mental diseases, various types. And he said the doctors, the medical establishment, you know, he's a doctor. He said it, all the colleagues, they all agree. It's just, it's remarkable how that's happening. And I took this long walk yesterday up into the mountains and swimming in this beautiful waterfalls. I was just thinking on the way back how the pharmaceutical industry really is devoted, unfortunately, to making it harder and harder for human beings to effectively respond to the situation that we're in, to effectively fight back, in a sense, against the chemicals that are poisoning us. And this researcher was saying how it was kind of interesting. He was talking about air pollution. He was saying that, you know, every day we eat maybe 2 pints of food, and we drink maybe 2 pints, is that it, or quarts, something, maybe quarts, two, whatever, quarts or pints, I can't remember, of liquid, maybe quarts, 2 quarts of liquid, 2 quarts of food, but we breathe about 80,000 quarts of air. And so if you have a 1 part per million toxicity of arsenic or whatever it is in air or water, or food, it's, you know, it's air. Air is the primary vector for bringing a lot of these diseases into us. So that's an important point to just be aware of. You know, we all want to drink, healthy water and eat healthy food, organic, non-GMO, and non-chlorinated water, and all of that. We're really working on our water and our food. But he was saying, compared to breathing, I mean, that's where a lot of the toxins enter our body, as well as through the skin and through smelling. If you actually smell something, it's worse than breathing, because it goes through the nasal passages. He said it goes right into the brain, straight from. He had certain technical names he used, but I thought that was interesting. So air quality, and again, of course, animal agriculture is one of the worst things for air quality. But we have many other chemicals, thousands and thousands of chemicals that are toxic that are released by corporations into the air, into the water, into food. And then he said the other way that toxins get into us as human beings is through breast milk and through the placenta when we're little infants and babies, and then also through injections. And, you know, we're injecting kids with massive heavy metals, you know, with aluminum, with mercury, with other adjuvants that are well known to be toxic. And we see the levels of autism and nervous system disease and cancer in children just spiking. And people, you know, according to the research, it's very obvious that within just a matter of 30 years with the present trends, you know, autism will be so rampant that virtually the children won't be hardly any children who can function normally. And the adults will have to spend all their time trying to take care of children who can't even function normally. I'm sure any parent who has a child or has children wants their kids to be adventurous and bright and strong and courageous and aware and clear and discriminatory and energetic and to contribute to the world. And yet kids are being absolutely doused with toxic chemicals that just collapse their capacities. GMO foods with toxins and water and, of course, what's being sprayed in the skies coming down on us. Geoengineering program with aluminum and barium and strontium. Toxic is now something like when I was a kid, I think it was maybe, you know, at the most 4 or 5 vaccines I got, and now it's 50 or 60 or even more that kids are getting in a barrage, and there's no exemptions allowed anymore. I mean, this is so high-handed. And so all of these things are attacks on our clarity, attacks on our capacity to see clearly, to stand up, to resist, basically, to resist enslavement and to create healthy, creative alternatives. So alcohol, of course, is a major problem. Any kind of substance, I would say, is a major problem. And then, of course, the use of land to grow alcoholics, not just alcohol, I mean tobacco, I mean all these things, they're toxic. And they're toxic to our bodies. I never drank, I did for about a year and a half maybe in college, and right when I left home I experimented. And I quickly realized how ridiculous it was to be hungover. But I remember the kids I knew. I mean, I ended up not hanging out with them for much longer. But how they would sort of exult, how they got so polluted, and and how they got so plastered, and you know, so were out of their mind. Right? That was some kind of great thing. They just lost their capacity to coordinate their body. They'd get into fights. They'd start yelling four-letter words at each other and laughing like that was some kind of funny thing, and becoming really, subhuman. Not towards animals, but you know, much worse than that, demonic in a certain sense. And so I think, why is that? I mean, I know, you know, we tried. I mean, Charles Myrtle Fillmore, who co-founded Unity, really promoted veganism. They were also promoted abstention from alcohol, and they were in the days of the temperance days when they actually outlawed alcohol. Unfortunately, people were not yet sufficiently spiritually, morally, intellectually evolved to carry it out. So, of course, it didn't work, and that's the same thing. So, banning something isn't the way, but hopefully consciousness will rise higher, and we'll see not only is this this whole industry of creating these various types of substances like alcohol and tobacco and heroin, cocaine, it takes a lot of land too. I mean, it's polluting and land that could grow food to feed hungry people. I mean, I can see it so clearly where I live in Northern California. The wine industry is one of the most toxic and invasive and aggressive industries you can ever imagine. I'm glad I don't live around dairies here in Northern California, like over in the valley. which is even much worse. But the vineyards, I mean, as I said in my video, Napa County, which is just south of us, has the highest cancer rate in the entire state of California, and Sonoma County is right behind them. And these are the two counties, the two biggest wine-growing counties, because of all the 2,4-D and the glyphosate and everything else that's sprayed on these vineyards. And it ends up in the water and the air, and the people are breathing it in. Then they're eating, of course, eating the grapes, but not. They never eat the grapes. They don't grow it. I mean, if they were just growing grapes, they wouldn't need all that land. People, you can't eat that many grapes, right? But they, or even just drinking maybe some grape juice, which, you know, might be something. But when you start bottling it and fermenting it, now you have massive industries that people can, consume enormous quantities. It's just unbelievable. I mean, they go on and on, hill and dale covered with vineyards, mile after mile after mile after mile, forests, we see it around us being cut down, habitat destroyed, insect populations destroyed, wildlife destroyed, rivers, sheds destroyed, for wine. And of course, as I pointed out, there are vegan wines, but most wines and beers and alcoholic substances are refined with animal inputs. The most common one is isinglass from fish bladders, but there's lots of other. Patricia Todd did some research and sent me a list, sent a list out to her group, and talked about the blood of animals, the bone marrow of animals, and the bones of animals, as well as many other, like eggs are used. The bones of crustaceans are used. So all these, there's other, I can't think of all of them right now, but there's lots of different, casein is also used from dairy operations. So these are all profit centers for the animal agriculture industry. They make money when they slaughter animals, not only from the flesh of those animals and the dairy products and eggs, but also from the skins, the bones, the gelatin is also used for boiling the bones in the wine industry and in beer industry. So it's got this cultural cachet, you know, to have your own little microbrewery or have a small organic winery, but still it's growing a lot of grain or grapes that could actually feed hungry people or could be habitat for animals for something that basically reduces clarity, is toxic. I mean, we say, you know, when someone drinks alcohol, they get intoxicated, right? We get intoxicated. I mean, the liver gets destroyed. Some of the people that are giving lectures, there's a guy, a doctor here, has been giving lectures about various diseases that people have, and over again, it just comes up, you know, alcoholics, you know, like B12 deficiency. Who has B12 deficiency? He said, you know, he went to medical school. It was kind of interesting. He said when he went to medical school, they ranted and raved. He said his professor ranted and raved. He said all the people, the most at risk for B12 deficiency are vegans. You know, vegans don't eat any meat. They don't eat any dairy. You know, they're really at risk for B12 deficiency. And he said, actually, I mean, vegans are definitely not the group that's most at risk for B12 deficiency. The group that's by far the most at risk is alcoholics. Their liver is compromised. Their whole systems are so compromised that the cofactor that is needed to make B12 work doesn't operate in alcoholics. It's destroyed, and so they have terrible problems with their nerves. Part of it's because of because alcohol is so destructive to the body on every level, and drug addicts in general, people use a lot of drugs very often, have B12 deficiency problems, and they're eating meat and dairy, and also alcohol. I mean, tobacco. All these things are very hard on our bodies. So why would we do that? You know, why would we consciously take in substances that are designed to destroy our clarity mentally, destroy our capacities physically, destroy our environment, destroy our society, destroy families, destroy everything? You know, why are these so promoted? And even, you know, I don't have to tell you, but even these substances that are banned, like marijuana has been banned, or heroin and so forth, But they're still promoted in many ways. You see, it's well known the CIA and many, you know, they've been making millions of dollars selling this stuff in the inner cities for decades. So it's very much promoted. And also, instead of, you know, our government doesn't engage in proactive behavior like putting millions of dollars into creating urban gardens. I mean, creating urban gardens, that would create clarity. That would create community awareness and joy in the miracle of life and healthy people. Instead of that, they put millions of dollars into the war on drugs, which is basically throwing people in jail where they get even more abused and get even more traumatized. And so how are they going to give up alcohol or drugs when it's just contributing to more abuse and the breakdown of families, when the male is thrown in jail and then there's, that causes even more abuse, more alcoholism. It's obvious. I mean, this is obvious. It's obvious that money could be used in a positive, constructive way to heal communities, but our government doesn't do it. You know, we don't. We just clearly have no interest in that. We have an interest in continuing, because the government is not by the people. You know, that's quite honestly a complete illusion. It is. Ultimately, we're responsible, but the powers that control the government, of course, are the financial and powers. So that's why I think it's so essential for us when we're in this movement to build grassroots awakening, and why it's so important for us to question, as vegans, drinking alcohol or using any substance that's harmful or that reduces our clarity and our connection with our inner wisdom and compassion and sensitivity, and to see the many ways that dumbing us down and disempowering us in many ways, you know, how it serves the system and making us afraid, of course, to speak up. It's so hard, really, in many ways, to speak up because we get marginalized and invisibilized when we do that. So we find this happening. So I think, you know, we're in a really a very critical time when it's great that we can get together like we're doing right now in these little, I call them liberated niches, you know, a niche that's liberated, a niche of freedom. You know, it's hard to find them. I mean, you don't find it unless your consciousness is tuned in to a certain frequency. And then when it is, suddenly you suddenly get opened up and you hear about this and your spirit says, yeah, I'm interested in that. And then you go there and then you learn more, you get more empowered, you learn about something else. And it's a proactive, it's a very positive cycle. As we get more aware, we get more aware, right? We build on that awareness. It's a positive cycle that we can build. We meet more people. We go to more conferences. We hear about websites before they're shut down. You know? and our awareness gets stronger and brighter and clearer, and we keep building it, and we learn, and we support each other in doing that. And it's the same, you know, the same thing happens in the opposite dimension. You know, as soon as we start shutting down our awareness, then we maybe start eating meat or we start drinking alcohol, and then we disconnect more and we start needing some drugs, pharmaceutical drugs. And I'm telling you, it's interesting to be here, because I never, as you all know, go to a doctor. I haven't been to a doctor in all these years and I haven't had any drugs or anything. But it's very interesting how there's one guy who's an MD from San Diego, and he's a kind of mainline MD, but he is at least vegan friendly, I guess. He's quite candid how pharmaceutical drugs devastate so many dimensions of our biology. We should, you know, to take them. You know, if someone has some kind of like Lyme disease and has to take drugs, antibiotics, and other things, it's just the consequences are devastating. So the importance of really taking responsibility for our own health, and I always say, you know, be very careful before you set foot in a doctor's office or a hospital. I mean, don't think that they're necessarily your friends. They're nice people, I'm sure, on some level, but the system, this is the other thing. I'm going to stop here. I think I'm rambling on too long here about this, but I want to say, I was thinking about this and wanted to share it, that
The other aspect is that science itself, I have a chapter in the World Peace Diet called Science and Reductionist Science and Religion, the two bickering brothers, both are sons of the hurting culture. But I'm very aware, more than ever, that the religion of our society really is science, and that it is a absolute cursed religion. I mean, it does nothing but destroy our ethical foundation. Science, materialistic science, which is science, that is science today, is based at its core on reducing life to matter and reducing everything to matter, taking the miracle out of everything. I mean, it's kind of a joke. You know, basically, they say, well, the Big Bang, you know, okay, give us one miracle. Then after that, we'll take care of it from there. After that, then it was all random, meaningless splitting of atoms and elements that somehow just created what we see around us. I mean, it's beyond absurd. I don't know how anyone with a straight face could say they're a scientist and actually pretend to believe such absurdities. As Voltaire said, if we believe absurdities, we'll commit atrocities. And that's what we're doing. We're committing one atrocity after another to ecosystems, to animals, to each other. Science is the weapon of destruction. Science is what it creates. These toxic chemicals, the toxic EMF radiation fields, the toxic vaccines, the toxic everything. I mean, that's science creating all of that and genetically engineering life and so forth and people. Will be next, I'm sure, if they keep going in the same way. They say ethically neutral. I mean, it's if there's anything demonic, I mean, that's it. It's reducing life to mere numbers. And kids are taught that in school. You know, I mean, the doctor yesterday, I could hardly listen to it. He said that, you know, scientists, the theory of life is that carbon atoms were just started splitting and created gradually by chance these complex molecules that created by chance clumps that created these primitive algae forms that eventually some of them got stuck on land, and so they learned to get minerals from rocks, and then those evolved eventually into primitive lichens. And then eventually into mushrooms, and then eventually into animals, and into trees and plants. You know, I could hardly believe an adult would spew such. You know, I mean, how could anyone say such a thing? seeing this enormous intelligence and beauty, and the life of these beings, and knowing my own inner richness in meditation, and the love, and compassion, joy, and creativity, and the yearning for adventure. I mean, how can we tolerate living in a culture with that kind of a religion that's injected into all of our kids as in school mandatorily? Yeah, I mean, it's equally absurd, of course, the standard whatever Christian thing that it all happened in 7 days. I mean, oh my gosh. So we need a real, obviously a new story, and something that really, I think, at the deepest level empowers us. And that's why I love vegan living and veganism, because I think there is that. There is this underlying foundation of the sacredness of all life, the interconnectedness of all life, and understanding the deep structure of life as consciousness. To me, it's so enriching. It's so beautiful. And so I think for us to, as vegans, because what I see, most vegans, they never question any of this, really. I mean, the scientific worldview, we kind of operate within it, and criticize any vegan like me who sort of strays away from science like we're somehow committing a felony. And I think, quite honestly, if we were to believe these fairy tales, these ridiculous myths about a Big Bang and random mutation of genes, and I mean such absurdities, How could we not commit atrocities and do what we're doing to animals and to the earth? Cut it all down. Why not? I mean, why not? It's just all random anyway. I mean, why not? So, it's time to remember. I think this wonderful poem by Walt Whitman, I have it memorized. I'll just say it. When I heard the learned astronomer, you know that poem? It's very short. It goes like this. When I heard the learned astronomer, when the proofs and figures were ranged in columns before me, when I was shown the charts and diagrams to add, divide, and measure them, when I, sitting, heard the learned astronomer where he lectured with much applause in the lecture room, how soon, unaccountable, I grew tired and sick and wandered off by myself in the mystical moist night air and from time to time looked up in perfect silence at the stars. I just love that poem because it's the poet brings in this other quality that we have of wonder, of silence, the wisdom of silence, the wisdom of listening deeply and opening to a far deeper level of consciousness than the shallow rational mind that wants to figure out everything and label it and reduce it to some kind of and then predict and control, dominate and exploit. I mean, come on, that's the essence of the whole thing. So going vegan is the key. Maintaining clarity, question the official stories and narratives, I think, underlying our society. And then creating, I think, hopefully, new spiritual traditions that enrich us, that don't reduce everything to official stories that are backed up by science. Science is poetry. It's a form, poetry has as much validity as science, and science has as much validity as poetry. It's a type of poetry. That's all. It's nothing more and nothing less. It's okay. I mean, science has got as much validity as poetry. Poetry has got a lot of validity. Depends on who the poet is. Depends on the science. The system of getting people to agree. It's based on myths in many ways. The myth of the objective observer. That there's some objective observer looking at the world. There is no such thing as an objective observer. So we're participants. We're all creating our reality through our consciousness. And so I'm really curious, I guess. I'm just curious how this play will continue to unfold here and what will happen with vegan living. I mean, how the vegan movement will respond to all this. Because I think it's becoming more and more obvious that there's a massive level of insanity on this planet that's being promulgated through the big institutions that we have been led to trust. And I think going back to our communities and our growing our own food and supporting each other with love and simplicity is really the path forward. But I want to stop here, and I noticed that our good friend, Judy Charman, is with us. And I had mentioned at the very beginning that Judy was recently at Unity Village participating in the Unity Convention there. And there's quite a lot of nice things happening, I think, in the intersection between vegan living, veganism as a movement, and spirituality or religion, and some of the, like Unity, for example, is one possibility. And Unitarianism also, I just had a great call yesterday, and the local Unitarian Church in Napa has invited me to go and speak to them about the benefits of vegan living. So I don't know if they're going to regret that decision, but hopefully they won't. So, Unity also is progressive. And so, Judy, I'd like to go ahead and unmute your phone. I think you all know Judy. She's a wonderful, longtime friend, the co-founder of the Prayer Circle for Animals, the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals, and the Circle of Compassion, and also the Interfaith Vegan Coalition, IVC, which is working to bring veganism to many different faiths, to encourage all different faiths to have a a vegan plank in their platform, essentially. And she's the author of some wonderful books. I love the Veggie Soup for the Chicken Soul, A Peace to All Beings is the name of the book, by also published by Lantern Books. And so, Judy, welcome to our call, and thanks again for joining us. Here we go. I think I just unmuted your phone. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Will, and
oh, okay.
Hi, everybody.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, so what I just enjoyed everything you said. It's just you're just so brave to talk about all these things, and basically what it is questioning everything. Questioning everything
right.
We've been taught, like Walt Whitman said, question everything you've been taught in school or churches. And that's another one of his poems. What we did, getting back to Unity, is we had a table, an Interfaith Vegan Coalition table at the Unity Convention, which is for Unity ministers and Unity. Some Unity lay people do come, and Unity teachers, and just
right.
Everybody that's interested in Unity. So it's a big bunch of people that come, and it's a five-day thing. It wasn't at Unity Village, though. It was in Overland Park, Kansas, at a hotel. And so...
Right, in the same general area, yeah.
Yeah, same general area, yeah, because yeah. Unity Village is in Kansas City, Missouri, not very far away. So we set up our table. It was in a really good spot where a lot of people were constantly going by because there was a
great
conference room right next to us, and a lot of people uh-huh. went to the meetings in that particular room. And so we had a really lucky spot, and we had some great volunteers. And Reverend Carol Saunders was with us, and she was the real reason why we were able to get the table, first of all, and
mm-hmm.
also that we were able to get such interest, I think. Because otherwise, you know, none of us, the rest of us, were Unity ministers. And she was. So that was a lot of credibility that she carried. And she was with us at the table most of the time. So,
and she's also, I just want to say quickly, she's a very rare species. She's actually an ordained Unity minister who is also a vegan. I mean, this is like very rare. It's
right.
so ironic. You know, you've got probably over 1,000 ministers, and I could say the number of actually vegan, you can probably count on one hand, but they're, or maybe two hands, but they're even though it was founded basically as a vegan movement 100 years ago, it's amazing how they've been able to sort of, but the good news is, there's a move to go back to the original teachings of veganism. That's what we're hoping to promote there. So go continue.
Yeah.
I just want to throw that in. Yeah.
there's somewhat yeah. of a movement, and Carol has really been
yeah.
a big part of that. And she wrote a little pamphlet, and we sold a lot of them. And it was the teachings
you sold them?
Of Charles Fillmore. Huh?
You sold them? You were selling them?
Yes. Uh-huh. Because she had them bound. They're just a little booklet. But I think we sold them for $5 a piece or something
$5.
Like that.
$5. Oh, that's nice. If somebody
yeah.
buys it, they're more likely to actually read it than if they just
give
them something.
Well, it was basically
yeah.
His
Charles's
lot
teachings,
of his
right?
quotes
yeah.
from all
right.
of his writings. He wrote a tremendous amount about what
yeah.
he called vegetarianism, because veganism wasn't coined until 1944. So this was
right.
back around the turn of the previous century.
Right.
Late 1800s, early 1900s, and Charles and Myrtle Fillmore had a vegetarian restaurant in Kansas City, which is just almost hard to believe. But they actually did,
yeah.
and it functioned very well for a long time. And they, the two of them, had as one of their mission statements that everyone should be vegetarian and not commit any cruelty to animals, because if you, partly because it's wrong to be cruel, but also because you cannot evolve spiritually as long as
right.
you are being cruel to animals. And they made a big point of that, and he wrote a lot about it. So Carol pulled out some of the really salient quotes of his.
Uh-huh.
And
wow.
so we sold quite a bit of those booklets to Unity ministers. We talked to a number of them, probably two hands worth of vegan Unity ministers, who I'm thinking of one in particular who said that she's been vegan a long time. The people in her congregation are not vegan except maybe two or three. And she said, but I don't talk about it. What I do is I just live my life, and I notice that people are interested in what I do, and so they imitate me. And she said, so I felt like that was enough. But we talked to her and some of the others about how it's really important to start dialoguing about this in church, in sermons, and make it more relevant to what's going on today, because veganism is a key part of what's happening to the environment. Animal agriculture, as you've said, as everybody knows, is a huge contributor to the destruction of the planet and has to be stopped. And Unity's been big on the green movement for a long time. And so we're telling them, you know, this goes with that, and as well as with the your founder's beliefs in it being the most, you know, the highest value that a human can attain to is to be kind and not commit harm. And so overall, I would say we were pretty thrilled with the response. We didn't
yes.
have a lot of people looking away and trying to avoid us. We had a lot of people who were not vegan coming up and asking for more information. And we created a little brochure called Are You Vegetarian for Spiritual Reasons? And we handed a lot of those out because, as you know, Will, there's a lot of Unity ministers who are vegetarian.
Yeah, they eat the cheese and eggs, but they don't mm-hmm. actually don't eat meat. Or at least they don't eat. They eat fish because that's not meat, right? But they consider themselves vegetarians, or maybe a little chicken, but they're vegetarians.
Right. There you go. You got it down. But the idea there is more for health and taking care of the body temple and all that, and it ignores the cruelty and our responsibility as in our species to not be cruel to other species. And so we created this little brochure and handed a lot of those out. A lot of people were very interested in those, and that you can actually get those if you want them at the Interfaith Vegan Coalition website. Email interfaith@idausa.org and ask for that brochure if you want it. I think it's a pretty valuable one because there's a lot of people who are vegetarian and they, you know, kind of look at you like, well, that's enough. You know, really
right, and they're spirit, they consider themselves spiritual. So it'd be good to give to people who are yoga students
mm-hmm.
or anyone who's on a somewhat meditation or spiritual journey of some kind. Yeah,
it pretty much is appropriate for people of any faith or any ethical tradition. So, and especially yoga. So, so those are available, and we did show Thomas Jackson's film, Prayer for Compassion, and thanks again to Carol Saunders, who made that happen. We showed it Tuesday night at the conference. And so even the people who didn't come, they at least saw the ad for it, And we were able to hand out a lot of little flyers about it and talk to people and say, hey, you got to come to this film. It's awesome. And talk to them about what it was about. So we didn't have a whole lot of ministers come. There were about 12 there. Mm-hmm. But each, we just kept saying to ourselves, each one of those ministers has a conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can influence a lot of people. So we took heart in that, and one of the women came up to us after the film and said, okay, that's it. That's the straw that broke the camel's back, she said, which is the greatest vegan saying. But she said, I'm vegan from now on. So
that
was great. And then we showed it again at the Unity Church on the plaza, which is in Kansas City, Missouri, on Thursday night. And we had over 200 people at that one. So because people, you know, the general public. And so it was a great showing. And we had lots of great questions and afterwards, and Thomas was there. Victoria Moran was there to answer questions, and so it
and
was.
You too, I think. Yeah.
And me, yeah, we were all up in front after the film, and so it was a big success. We thought. So we're, you know, in light of all the things that you were talking about, things look so dark. We have to just keep going, right? And
right.
Keep shining a light in all
the
dark places wherever we can and not give up and just believe that human beings really are capable of making this leap of consciousness to a higher place where they can live in harmony with what's really in their hearts, which is you know, to not do harm and to be kind and to love one another.
Yeah.
And,
I think that's, you know, that's a key point. It's like people, we have this idea, and I've been saying it myself, that humanity is kind of asleep. You know, we're trying to awaken people. But in a way, the more I think about it, like everything I was saying today, it's not so much that humanity is asleep. It's like humanity is being forced into a comatose state. You know, purposefully, kind of like, you know, I mean, kids are born into, you know, having to eat these foods and have this whole, you know, scientific reductionism and all the chemicals and drugs. And I mean, it's like, so we're trying to awaken out of something that's being imposed in many ways on us. Part of it's just culturally, it's just been going on for 10,000 years. But part of it, I think, is just so much profit involved, and so much it's so easy to control people and make a lot of money and run things that they don't. The last thing they want is people who are really bright-eyed and awake. So the good news is, I think, as we do awaken, what you're talking about is exactly that. These, I think, unity movement and all these sort of alternative, more progressive traditions shine the light in their own unique way, and it's great to bring the vegan message like you're doing there. Yeah. Did you want? Could you say something about the something coming right in September, a year from this September, I guess?
Yeah, that is. I'm actually looking at the name of it. It's called 2020 Vision: A World That Works for All, and it's a conference that we're going to have at Unity Village next September of 2020, which is why we're calling it 2020 Vision.
2020 Vision, that's great.
Play
yeah.
on words, and it'll be a vegan spirituality forum and retreat. So a little bit of retreat and a little bit of putting our heads together and looking at what can we do? How can we create this new story? How can we, get people to evolve, basically?
Right.
And not so much change, but become who we really already are.
Right.
And
right.
And just shed all those old layers of the toxic stuff you've been talking about, and just the patriarchal teachings that have just led to nothing but destruction.
Right.
So that is going to be, you're going to be there. You're going to be one of the main speakers.
Madeline and I will both be there.
Uh-huh.
And and Madeline will be with me too.
Both
planning on coming, I think, probably. Wonderful. Yeah, most likely, hopefully. Yeah, so.
And Victoria Moran.
And also, and the third one is?
Dr. Lisa Kemmerer. She's written a lot of books. She's a professor. She wrote Animals and World Religions, so she's quite versed in that. And she's also the curator for the art exhibit of Animals and Religion. And so we're going to have her panels there for this, and they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. We had them when we were in Canada. At that conference,
The Parliament of World Religions, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they were a big
hit. They were very, very well looked at, studied by people who walked by. Those pull-up banners, and beautifully colorful, and they talk about different religions, 10 different religions that she's done so far, and their attitudes about animals.
Compassion for animals.
And the good things that they've said about animals and clues to how we can reach those religions and say, hey, you know, this is what you say you believe. Let's put this into action. So we will have those panels there, and this, you can register for this at In Defense of Animals if somebody in the audience wants to attend. We've already got the registration set up.
That's good to know.
Carol Saunders, the Reverend, the Vegan Unity Minister, is a big part of making that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. So,
that's great. So everybody, September 20th, that weekend, is that what you said?
It's 2020, but it's actually the 10th through the 13th.
Okay, September 10th of 2020.
September 10th through the 13th, yeah.
Right, so that's a little over a year away.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that'd be great. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody there and continuing the conversation
planting more
seeds.
We're hoping to get pre-vegans to come, especially ministers. So the more vegans we have there, the better.
to help
keep the conversation going in a positive way and helping them see that they don't have to keep quiet about it anymore and worry about losing members. That this is something especially a lot of young people want to hear about, and if they're vegan, they want to be welcomed into a church and feel like they're not going to have to listen to somebody talk about, you know, make jokes about animals and talk about them disrespectfully.
Right.
I did want to mention that Thomas's film, you can go if you want to show it at a church or a home or at a theater, you can email Thomas at thecompassionprojectfilm@gmail.com, and he can help you set it up, figure out which format you need the film in, and all that. And Will is in the film. I'm in the film. There's a lot of people in it, and it's having a huge impact, I think, on bringing spiritual people together to just really start thinking about this. So it's just wonderful. We needed a film like this, and Thomas did it, and someplace in there, I remember they said that one of the questions that Thomas is trying to get to is, does what we eat matter to God? And so he's asking all these spiritual leaders things along that line, and the leaders are pretty much all vegan, not all of them, but most of them.
Right.
So it's pretty compelling to show it to people in churches and yoga centers and temples, mosques, you know, wherever you might find a spiritual group. And but anyway, and Veg Fund will help a lot. They will pay the whatever that screening
that licensing
is.
Licensing
fee, yeah. And and they'll pay for food if you want to have snacks.
Right.
And
yeah,
so.
That's true. I'll put a link to that also in my email following up.
Yeah.
That's good, yeah.
But if you want
great
to show
Judy.
It, it's worth showing. And
yes.
That email is the email to go to get the information.
Right. So just Thomas's email. Okay,
right.
I have that. I can give that to everybody.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks
all
so
right.
much.
You're welcome.
We're getting kind of close to the end of our allotted time here, so I have a few more things I want to wrap up with. But it was fantastic. Thank you so much, Judy, for being there and helping so much to bring this message to the spiritual communities. That's really
well,
so
we're
great.
Just going to do it and believe it's going to work.
Right, right. You do.
Thanks,
keep planting those
seeds.
Thanks
for having me on and letting me
talk. All right. Thanks,
bye,
Judy.
Everybody.
All right.
Blessings.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Yeah, bye. Okay, there's I noticed Marlene has her hand up. So Marlene, we love Marlene. Marlene has got the Animal Nation, Vegan Nation, I should say, radio show. Yes, Marlene, are you there? Did I unmute you?
Yes, hi. Yes, hi, Will. Hi, Judy. Hi, everyone. And I just wanted to let you know that today's Vegan Nation broadcast is my interview with Thomas Wade Jackson about the A Prayer for Compassion. So this
oh, really?
Is really great
oh,
that
gosh.
It was, it broadcast today. And so it was, and of course, we talked about you and Judy and unity and everything. So I just wanted to let you know that, and thank you. That's it.
Oh, good. And that's is that archive now at WC, what is it, the archive?
Yes,
wcuw.org/veganation.
Yeah. So that's
great.
Archive,
so wcuw.org and then /veganation. Yeah, it's great. You can listen to Marlene's interviews, and that would be a great one with Thomas, I think. Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks so much, Marlene, for sharing that. I really appreciate it. Okay. Thanks. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, so, we're right about it at the time here. And I just wanted to say a couple of things quickly here. Please check out the resources for July 2019 that you can download from the link that I sent you all in the emails that I sent out. There's links to my video on alcohol and vegan living, also the healing power of music, also the lecture in Athens that I gave, and that one's got a new intuitive kitchen. Video, she's been doing quite a few lately, Easy Herbal Sauce. Madeline sends her love to everyone. It was so fun, you know. I'm in the mountains of California up here, and she's in the mountains of Switzerland at the same time. She's there for 3 weeks. And so she's down in these Swiss-Italian Alps. And we were connected with WhatsApp, the application, the phone. So I was sending her a few pictures of the beautiful mountains and the waterfalls and the river on the south fork of the Stanislaus. It's beautiful. I was sending her those pictures, and she was sending me pictures of the of the little villages nestled in the. She's riding around on her bicycle or pushing up these steep hills, and I'm climbing around and taking swims. So she sends her love and is always active over there in promoting the vegan message. But anyway, and also just go, you know, just have, if you have a chance, go through. There's some great information here. There's this nice article by Judy where she talks about her time at Unity Convention, and this great video by Rich Roll called Vegan on $25. I highly recommend it. It's funny and very helpful. A lot of people think that being vegan is expensive, and he really shows how it can be expensive if you just want to live on nothing but very expensive vegan juices. But it can also be very inexpensive if you're buying bulk grains and beans and veggies and so forth. And there's some other great, a lot of good stuff coming out. I mean, the vegan movement is growing by leaps and bounds. There's a great movie, film on the vegan village of African people in Jerusalem. And this well, so many things I don't know what to say. There's the Maori people. I really wanted to mention that because we were in New Zealand about six years ago, and they were, the Maoris are kind of known for being big meat eaters, and quite a few Maoris came to my lecture, and the elder of the Maoris spoke after my lecture saying how he thought that the vegan living is really in alignment with Maori values. And everyone, I remember I had tears in my eyes when he got up and he said that very forcefully to the whole audience that was there, all the non-Maori people too. And now there's a new research, a woman at the university talking about how the Maori people are going vegan as a part of their, an expression not only of their values, traditional values, but also, which I think is so important, as an expression of their resistance to being colonized by the white people, forcing them to eat dairy and meat and also taking their land away from them for dairy operation. I mean, it's terrible, you know, how they use cows to colonize and destroy cultures. It's happening all over the world. It's happening in the Amazon right now. And the ranchers go in and kill and destroy indigenous cultures and cut down the forests and grow soybeans to feed to imprison the animals. So anyway, there's just so much to learn and so much to be grateful for and still so much to do. But anyway, so check out those things. And then I guess that's we're getting to the end here. I just want to say finally also that it's been a wonderful week. I've been up here in the mountains since last Saturday, so almost a week. And just being among the trees and taking a lot of time to be quiet and meditate and swim in this lake here and the rivers. I highly recommend, if you have a chance for a time every year, to get into nature. And like John Muir said, to celebrate the tidings that nature brings us. It's so healing, I think. It's so helpful. And so that's about it for now. I think, let me see, nobody else has their hand up. So don't forget, our next meeting will be in August on the 15th. Between now and then, we'll be speaking at the Santa Rosa Veg Fest. So if you're in Northern California, come and see us on Santa Rosa, August 3rd at the Veg Fest. And until our next call, I just send my heartfelt blessings to all of you. Thank you so much, each and every one of you, for the efforts you're making. We give thanks knowing that no effort we make is ever lost. They really all help. Every seed that we plant does make a difference, and that the vegan revolution and evolution is proceeding. It's unstoppable and is ultimately victorious. And we give thanks for the beautiful expressions of life that we see all around us. Have a wonderful month until August 15th. Enjoy your time and stay in touch. If you have any questions or if there's anything you want me to talk about, just let me know. And we'll just have a short wrap-up piece of music here. Let's see, I think I'll do Corona. It's just about a minute long. So much love to everyone, and we'll talk to you next month. Thanks again.